This recording is for Liz Rose with the Economic Policy Institute on Thursday, August 28, 2014, at 12 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Ms. Liz Rose. Ms. Rose, you may begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this media teleconference. My name is Liz Rose. I'm the Communications Director for the Economic Policy Institute. As you know, two court decisions came down yesterday on FedEx and employee misclassification. I want to introduce you to two labor experts who will talk about how these court decisions are a victory for workers and for responsible employers, and they will answer your questions. Ross Eisenbray of the Economic Policy Institute will be on in a second, but I want to start with Françoise Carré. Françoise is with the McCormick Graduate School Center for Social Policy at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. She is the research director there. Ross and Françoise will make opening statements, and then you will have the opportunity to ask questions. Before I turn it over to Françoise, I just want to note that this call is being recorded. Take it away, Françoise.
Yes, good afternoon. I guess I will just give two words. One is about what the misclassification is about, and what it really is about is situations in which people that are really fit the definition of a wage employee, a wage and salary employee, are treated as self-employed by law, by taxation, by their employer. So that's one thing. And then the other is the piece of FedEx Corporation that is directly involved in this case is FedEx Ground Delivery. And it pretty much sets up its business and home delivery system through people that it treats as independent contractors. And the dilemma for this corporation is that increasingly they want to create constraints and obligation on the delivery system and on the services that people provide when they deliver the packages. And so they direct the work on one hand. On the other hand, they've set up this network of independent contractors in order to create a lot of distance between themselves and the workers. And what this court decision really is about is basically saying if you control the work, how it is done, and if these people have little room for any kind of control of their own economic fortunes, then they really are FedEx employees. So this is an issue that's been brewing for a very long time. I think the early cases against FedEx started late 1990s, early 2000s. And it also affects other industries, and we can talk about that as well in the question and answer period. So that's what I really wanted to say to get us started. The industries that are affected, likely to be affected by this decision, include obviously package delivery, trucking, which sees a lot of independent contractor employment set up. Some home care services, construction, and some professional services as well. So the decision could have a wide ramification. What the workers lose if they are treated as self-employed instead of wage workers is that they lose all coverage that exists under labor standards in the United States and under state law. That means they're not eligible for unemployment insurance. They're responsible for their own contribution to the Social Security Medicare tax, which is double what they would pay if they were wage workers. The employer would pick up the other half. They're responsible for their own worker compensation insurance. In addition to that, in a company like FedEx, which provides benefits to its regular workforce, these workers are also losing out on those benefits. On top of that, they really are what we call shock absorbers for the company, meaning that if there's any fluctuation in the routes, in the volume of work, they're the ones absorbing the consequences in terms of their earnings. So essentially that's the nutshell in terms of what as far as the workers are concerned. For the competition of companies that operate like FedEx just operates, those companies that are treating delivery workers, truck drivers as employees are picking up the employer payroll tax, they're picking up the worker compensation insurance premiums, and so they're incurring higher costs, and they find themselves at a competitive disadvantage with companies that are treating the majority of their workforce as self-employed. Finally, this issue also, as I said, affects other industries, and it has a ramification for the worker compensation insurance industry as well. So if a company misclassifies the workers and is found to be violating the law and the worker is injured, the worker might still be able to qualify under the worker compensation insurance policies. And therefore, the workers under the worker compensation system who are collecting benefits, while the employer never paid in over the years the premiums to cover those costs. So I'll stop here.
Good. And this is Ross Eisenbray from EPI. I just want to add a couple of things to what Françoise has said. It is very important that we have a level playing field and that companies not be allowed to use sham structurings to avoid their labor law responsibilities. So Françoise has mentioned, you know, what the difference is for the employees, that they have to pick up these payroll tax obligations and would have to pay to be covered by workers' compensation, would have to pay for themselves. But FedEx, by virtue of avoiding all of these costs, has a tremendous unfair economic advantage, competitive advantage over UPS, for example, and over the Postal Service and any other package delivery competitor. So if you think about the workers' compensation premium alone in California averages 2% of payroll. If you think about the cost of the payroll taxes, the FICA taxes that they're avoiding on 27,000 employees nationwide, we're talking about something on the order of $80 million a year that they're saving and that they can put to lower prices that undercut their competitors. So there are tremendous implications for employees, but this is also a situation of sort of Gresham's law of good money being pushed out by bad money, good employment practices being pushed out by bad employment practices. It's very hard to compete and maintain labor standards against someone who is undercutting you by 4 or 5% of payroll by essentially a sham transaction cheating. And for the employees, in addition to the things Françoise mentioned, when you're not an employee, treated as an employee, when you're treated as an independent contractor, you have a situation like FedEx where people were working 55 hours a week. They don't have overtime protection. They miss out on all of the other things in California labor law, not to mention federal labor law on sick pay and leave policies. So FedEx has really been dragging down the labor market, depressing labor standards, and getting away with it for a long time. This lawsuit was filed in 2005, I believe. So this has been going on a long time, and it's a huge victory for workers and the competitors of FedEx that the court in both in California and Oregon is putting an end to this.
You can open it up for questions now.
Okay. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, you may press star 2. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question comes from Dave Jamieson with Huffington Post.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for doing the call. Appreciate it. I was hoping somebody, maybe Ross, if you could, like, put into context the significance of the ruling legally, like given the whole thicket of litigation around, you know, FedEx and the independent contractor arrangement. You know, what's this going to mean, you know, around the country for FedEx drivers? And, you know, what could the ramifications be beyond FedEx? I mean, we're just talking about, like, the logistics industry or anything else where there's a lot of, you know, apparent misclassification.
Well, California is, by itself, is, you know, about a tenth of the economy. So when you have to change your employment practices to conform to California, it should lead a company to think about changing its employment practices elsewhere. FedEx, unfortunately, has said that they will, you know, just do what they can to change their employment practices just enough. You know, they'll make tweaks and modifications and try again and force employees to sue them again. I think that is the prospect that we have from that company. But California law, this isn't the first case. There was the Estrada case a few years ago. It is pretty clear, and the California courts are a leader that other courts look to. So when they are interpreting their own laws, I think that they will look to the California decisions and apply them. Now, on the other hand, the First Circuit, which has declared that federal common law is different, has made this much harder. If you're trying to sue under federal law, I'm not sure that the California case is going to really change how the courts are going to react. But the fact of the matter is that there are 50 state systems. Some of them have statutory rules that have to be interpreted. Some have just the common law. It's a matter of time to see how influential the California opinion is. I'm hoping that it's very influential and that we'll see a number of these court cases come down that will force companies like FedEx to change their practices.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tim Noah with MSNBC.
Hi. I was wondering if anybody could talk about some of the other industries that might be affected, that might be engaged in litigation of their own. For example, I've never encountered any evidence that the cable guys have been suing the cable companies, even though they operate under a similar arrangement. Is there some legal action going on in the cable industry in a parallel effort?
Francoise, do you know?
Cable, I don't know. I can certainly tell you that there are industries where there is extensive litigation going on, notably the construction industry. Cable, I do not know. I know that there is attention drawn to the situation of cable workers, but there hasn't been organized action that I know of. I mean, I think what's important to note about this decision, in addition to what Ross said about it being taking place in California, is that it's the entire business model of an entire unit of a very large corporation. So independent contractor misclassification has been an issue, and there's litigation around it in particular industries, but it is when it's the visibility and the demonstration effect of having a large corporation that has set up its entire model this way, getting a decision that runs against its business model, that is going to get attention. I should also add that in addition to court cases, there's a fair amount of state-level activity by regulators, setting up a misclassification task forces, bringing in both employer representatives, worker representatives, the worker compensation insurance industry, the unemployment insurance offices, to try and come up with ways to monitor the situation. And that might end up giving rise to additional litigation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes
I was just going to add that I didn't know about whether there is specific litigation on cable installers, but when you think of the breadth of the use of this, you know, that it's gone to strippers. You know, there was a case in California where strippers were being treated as independent contractors. The imagination of employers to try to get around taxes, to get around all of the employment protections. I would be surprised if there's any service industry where someone isn't using this, and a case like this will inspire lawyers to take another look and unhappy workers to take another look at their situation and say, you know, maybe I can sue, maybe I can get these protections.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Our next question comes from Dave Johnson with the Campaign for America's Future.
Hi. Thanks for the call. I have a similar question, but it's about the next level of what they do, where they set up cutout companies to provide employees at an arm's length. Like, I understand Amazon's contractors at warehouses use a contracting company. So you have a shell company in the middle, sort of. The whole purpose of the company is to create this arm's length. Will this fight that or increase that? And what do you see happening to along these lines to fight that kind of a scheme? Thank you.
If they have the same, if the employer has the same kind of control that FedEx has, even though there is a middleman, it would still put them in the position of being a joint employer, I think. I'm not sure that's going to be a successful strategy. But, FedEx is already doing that in California.
Yes. You know, what I would add is largely going to depend on the deal that FedEx works out with those intermediaries, and then how those intermediaries handle the employment relationship and what setup they have with the truck driver, the delivery truck drivers. I mean, we have a related case going way back when Microsoft in Oregon, I think it was sued by independent contractor programmers and ended up farming them out to temporary staffing companies. But even with that, the fact that Microsoft was actually controlling a lot of the work and precisely specifying the requirements of the tasks, it ended up still being held accountable for some of the employee benefits and some of their working conditions. And we're going to see more and more of this. As companies try and create all these layers between themselves and the worker who actually performs the work, they're at the same time and increasingly trying to control the product, the service, by adding stipulation, creating constraints and obligation on the end worker. And once that happens and there's a trail of that through the contracts, then you set up the sort of the evidence and the groundwork for potential cases to come up.
Well, the analogy is McDonald's case, where the franchisees,
yes,
you know, are in effect a middleman designed to protect McDonald's from being responsible for wage and hour laws and all of these other obligations. And the National Labor Relations Board just decided that, no, in fact, they are a joint employer, at least in the case that was presented to them. So it is not a guarantee, to get away from these obligations, including the collective bargaining relationship, by setting up a middleman. If the company continues to maintain control, you know, to the incredible level that FedEx did here of, you know, how people groom themselves, it's hard for them to escape liability under a decision like this.
I mean, the other related case is, you know, an obvious at least a shortcut solution would be to go through temporary staffing companies. And there is also growing litigation around that piece, precisely with the warehouses that are providing services for Walmart and other large big box discounters. And, you know, in a recent decision, Walmart was held, there was the shared responsibility between the temporary staffing company and Walmart for what happened in the warehouse to some workers was held up as being joint responsibility. So I think what you can count on is that there will be innovation on the part of FedEx, and they will try some other ways. And then the question will be, how are the workers treated? What are the working conditions? What obligations are they under? And what degree of any autonomy do they actually have?
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. We are currently holding for questions. Our next question comes from Mike Stark with Stark Reports blog.
Hi, guys. See, this is a Circuit Corp. It's the Ninth Circuit. FedEx says that the Second Circuit, the D.C. Circuit, the circuit that's generally considered a just one below the Supreme Court, has ruled in the opposite direction. And I think I heard you guys say that what the Ninth Circuit actually did here was apply California law. So I'm curious about whether or not this has any legs for the rest of the country, and if so, why?
Well, it will depend on the interpretation of state law. And the states, as they interpret their their own common law of independent contractor relationships, or a state statute that lays out some of these same factors, they will be influenced by California.
Was Oregon and California state law same and pretty much identical in the important ways? And
yeah.
They also said they're going to appeal. Have you folks assessed your prospects before the Supreme Court if they choose to accept it?
I think that they're more likely to ask for a rehearing en banc in the Ninth Circuit. I don't think the Supreme Court would be likely to take this case because, you know, the California law has been, the state law has been pretty clearly established in state law decisions. That's really what the Ninth Circuit was applying here. So
I'd be concerned about freedom of contract.
That would not be an issue that would arise in this case. It's an interpretation of California law.
Right.
And I think what I wanted to say, just to add to the question about whether it's got a ramification nationwide, not at the federal level, but at the state level, these cases pop up under different state statuses. But, you know, states don't all use widely different criteria. So here was a right to control test, and a lot of states applied that test under a number of their labor statutes. And other states use another test, but it's not like you have, you know, 50 different criteria around the country. There's a fair amount of congruence, so that a decision such as this one is going to raise concerns and have ramification in other states that apply similar tests.
Thank you. At this time, we have no further questions in the queue.
All right. Well, then, thank you all for joining the conversation. And if you have any follow-up questions, I think you have our contact information, or you can go through Liz Rose. So thank you all.
Thank you all.